At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome back to iGen Politics. This is a podcast that makes politics engaging and relevant for all generations. This is Victor Shi,
who is a Gen Zer, and I'm from the other generation, Jill Wine Banks. And today's hashtag Jill's Pin is a dollar sign because we have a wonderful economist, Paul Krugman, with us today to talk about that aspect of today's world.
Yeah, on nearly every economic indicator, our economy is doing historically well. Unemployment is at a 50-year low. Inflation is cooling. Consumer confidence is rising. The stock market has broken several records. And much of this is thanks to President Biden's policies that have shifted power away from the richest Americans to empower the middle class and those with the fewest resources. And adjusted for inflation, most workers' wages have gone up. But even with so much good news, President Biden faces a persistent problem. People remain pessimistic. They're not feeling the successes of our economy, and even those who do don't attribute the successes to President Biden. What will it take to change that? Luckily, we have the perfect person to help us answer those questions.
We are honored to have the incomparable Paul Krugman for the second time as our guest today. He is a distinguished economist, a winner of the Nobel Prize for Economics. He has written numerous economic books and textbooks and has taught economics at very outstanding schools like MIT and Princeton. Additionally, Paul is a frequent guest on every television station and a columnist, of course, for the New York Times, where he writes about the economy. And we will talk to him today about all the things that Biden has done, could do, and how to get him credit for it. Paul, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks. Great to be on again.
Thank you so much.
Such our pleasure.
Yes. Thank you so much for coming on. We have a lot to talk about. And let's start by talking about the economy and a piece that you recently wrote about how America is on the mend. Can you talk to us about what you're looking at that suggests that we are on the mend and sort of how our America kind of country is looking right now?
Okay. I mean, there are two, you know, there's one economic indicator, which is, you know, we spent a lot of the last few years very concerned about inflation. And all indications are that the whole inflation thing has, you know, hugely receded. You want to look a little bit past the usual numbers. Although those are looking pretty good too. But, you know, consumer price inflation over the past year doesn't fully capture just how good things are. You want things to look like core personal consumption expenditures deflator over the past 6 months, or the New York Fed's multivariate core, whatever. You know, the various things that try to capture where are we cutting through the noise, all say that basically the war on inflation is over and we won. So that's a really big thing. The other thing that really went quite wrong for a while was crime. We did, in fact, have a genuine crime wave in 2020 and into 2021, probably because of the social dislocation from the pandemic. And that has receded incredibly. Again, homicides are not quite back, but homicides are plunging, and violent crime in general is actually lower than it was before the pandemic. So we're, you know, a lot of the things that people were saying, well, America is not in great shape, have gone away. And in many respects, we look like, you know, we're back, baby.
Right.
So why is it that the American public doesn't feel that? Why do they still keep feeling basically depressed about the economy, even though all the numbers really do show, and all the serious economic commentators tell us that everything is fine again?
Like a lot of people, I may have been one of the first people to point out that there was a really growing disconnect between the economic numbers and what we were seeing in economic sentiment. And one thing that you probably should start with is to say, just how partisan attitudes about the economy and crime too, but especially about the economy have become. So we have some data, it depends on, you know, there are different surveys, but we have some data that where you can break out attitudes about the economy by self-identified Republicans and Democrats. And there are different universes. Democrats, you know, obviously, if you talk to a Democrat on the street, they'll say, oh, you know, groceries cost a lot more than they used to. But Democratic attitudes about the economy are actually largely recovered. People are not feeling down if they say they're Democrats. Republicans, you know, treat the economy as if it was, their attitudes are, in general, putting the current economy on a par with the depths of the Great Recession or with the economy back in 1980 when we had 12% inflation you know, 7-8% unemployment. So a lot of it is simply a lot of people who say the economy is lousy, what they're really saying is, I hate the idea that a Democrat is president. Then the rest is more speculative, but one possibility also is just that people's reference point. Economists like to look at inflation over the past year, or particularly when you're trying to assess trends in the economy, you want to look at like the past 6 months. People's sense of what things ought to cost reaches farther back than that, maybe 2 years or more. And so if you look at, you know, inflation has really plunged since early to 2023, which means that inflation over the past 2 or 3 years still looks elevated, and that may be having a negative effect on people's perceptions. Between those two things, I don't think I at the moment, I've been actually working on this, I think that the partisan aspect is probably the biggest one, but those are the two reasons mainly why people say negative stuff.
Because actually adjusted for inflation, prices aren't that bad.
And well, prices adjusted for inflation, of course, by definition. But no, adjusted for wage growth, you know, most people have. If we go back to, you know, to the eve of the pandemic, and it's just very difficult to peer through the fog of what was going on in between because so many crazy things were happening. But if we compare now with the end of 2019, most people's wages have comfortably outpaced inflation.
That's very interesting. You know, and you've been one of the economists who I think has gotten a lot of what we're seeing now correct. But a lot of economists and pundits around the country, like you said, were predicting that we would be facing a recession by now. But the reality suggests the far opposite. I'm wondering what you think they got wrong or they didn't see. And what are the economic indicators you think economists and pundits and just the larger public should be paying attention to right now?
Okay. So first of all, in terms of recession calls, you know, economists have a perfect track record. They have never succeeded in calling a recession. And that's kind of understandable because in a way, if everybody really knew that a recession was around the corner, it would happen already. You know, almost always a recession comes either from something you weren't paying attention to or something that you didn't think was going to be as bad as it turned out to be. And so they come as a surprise. What was happening in, as early as, you know, a year ago, was that a lot of economists were saying we're going to need a lot of high unemployment to control inflation because that's what happened after the inflation of the 1970s. And they were extrapolating from that experience. And the trouble with history is it doesn't necessarily repeat very well. And that was it was just a bad analogy. There were reasons for people to make that. But I was a little bit shocked at how much people said, oh, what we have right now is just like 1980, because there were lots of ways in which it was obvious that it wasn't.
So I want to go back to this question of sort of how and why and what could be done to communicate to the public how much better off they are now than they think they are, not just how much better off they are factually, but what's missing in the communications?
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
Well, I'm not sure that there's, I mean, there is a problem. It's certainly for politicians, and I can say from personal experience, you know, nothing saying, you know, actually your income has risen faster than inflation and inflation is way down. That's a very good way to get people really angry at you. It's not a winning debating strategy. So the administration, you know, that of course will boast about what it's done, how things have gone, as they should, and that will, that's fine. But it's I don't know if there's any magic way to turn it around. It may make a little bit more sense. To lean at least a little bit on news media. There is some evidence that news reporting has been much more negative than the economic fundamentals warrant in a way that was not true in the past. There's actually quantitative evidence on that. But I think a lot rests on decision makers who are not. Not the government, but who by acting as if inflation, as if things are good, make it credible to the public that things are good. So, Federal Reserve, when the Federal Reserve cuts rates, it will be a really big deal, even though the markets have pretty much priced that in already. But the public doesn't know that. So when Jerome Powell says, inappropriately circumspect language, that we're cutting interest rates because inflation appears to be contained, that will be a big signal. There'll be a lot of headlines. You know, Fed says inflation is under control, and people will, I think, start to see it. To a certain extent, people pay attention to the stock market far more than they should. Most people don't actually have very much at stake in the market, but they take it as a signal. And the fact that stocks are up because long-term interest rates are down, and long-term interest rates are down because people think the Fed's going to cut because they think inflation is under control, that actually makes a difference. And interest rates that matter directly to people, mortgage rates have been coming down, essentially because inflation is coming down, and that will matter. But you know, if you say if only we had a more persuasive president, or if only the White House ran better ads, that everything would be great. I don't think there's any magic bullet for that.
What do you think of their term? And it seems like they've shifted away from the term in recent months, but of Bidenomics, and you know, changing what Reaganomics once was into something positive for Democrats. Is that a resonant term, do you think?
Well, it obviously wasn't working really well. Red people stayed resolutely pessimistic, even though there was a lot to be, there's a lot to be said. Bidenomics is a real thing, but it's more than just, inflation and unemployment. Bidenomics is a much bigger role of the government as a directing investment, green energy, and all of that. There's a lot to be said for it, but it may be that there's just the populace is too cynical, these days for that to work. But so maybe trying to say, look at how great Bidenomics is not a great strategy. But saying, hey, the economy, is doing well, and you don't give up the term because that would be admitting that there was something wrong with Bidenomics. But, advertising slogans don't really seem to make that much difference.
So I want to go to, I follow you on Twitter, on X, and you recently X'd or tweeted something about the results of the positive and negative polling and opinions positive economic shock. Could you talk more about that? Because I found that very interesting.
Okay. I'm not sure which tweet. And, you know, I've been reluctant. Most of what I put up, by the way, is on alternatives. You know, so there's Threads and there's Blue Sky. But now I actually generally triple post. I'm also posting on X as well. So I'm not entirely sure which one that was. I mean, one of the things I did that got quite a lot of reaction was to say that, you know, people who say that there's something mysterious about this fall in inflation with the economy continuing to grow, that it isn't. It is exactly what textbook economics would predict if what we're seeing, as I believe we are, is the economy finally getting its act together after the disruptions from COVID. And to illustrate that, I said, you know, this is textbook economics. Here, let me show you a diagram from one of the leading economics textbooks, which happens to be the one that I co-wrote with Robin Wells.
And I'll tell you that I read my macro class.
Yeah. So Krugman Wells, 7th edition, on its way to a bookstore and a digital site near you, has a picture of negative and positive aggregate supply shocks. And what we're experiencing now is, you know, overwhelmingly what we can see happening very clearly is that there was a lot of discombobulation caused by COVID. COVID led to supply chain issues. Ships cruising back and forth outside the port of Los Angeles, unable to dock. It led to a lot of labor force disruption. People were buying different things. People wanted to do stuff. So there was a lot of churn in labor markets and with companies reporting difficulty hiring workers. All of that stuff has subsided now because we've had time to adjust to this new reality. And you can really see that in pricing. You can really see that we're right back on the kind of inflation that you would expect otherwise, given the current unemployment rate and everything else.
So I want to go back to, you mentioned the sort of negative headlines that we're seeing from the media, and you're someone who, you're not a part of sort of the reporting side, but you're part of the opinion side. Why do you think that is? Because, you know, I can only imagine when Trump's economy was doing well, you had right-wing outlets like Fox really be the first ones to give Trump the credit, and they were really loud and vocal about it. Why don't you think maybe like MSNBC or the New York Times gives President Biden the credit that I think he deserves around the economy?
Well, first of all, no, they're not. My employer is not like Fox. Yes. It is not a partisan political outlet. And, you know, Fox is there. They do some real reporting, but it's all in service of a political cause. And that's not the model for the Times or MSNBC. And if anything, what I would say is, look, there's very effective pressure. Say something favorable about the Biden administration, and you will get enormous quantities of hate mail. I mean, it's actually funny. I'm the king of hate mail, but I get the most hate mail when I say something about receding inflation or generally about kind of right-wing orthodoxy on economics being wrong, much more than that than I get when I say something like, well, Donald Trump tried to overthrow democracy. It's people get really, and journalists, you know, respond to that. Most journalists in mainstream media probably are, in fact, centrist or center-left Democrats fundamentally. They probably are relatively liberal. They're desperately afraid of being accused of liberal bias. And so they bend over backwards. You see this all the time. They bend over backwards to avoid saying nice things about Democrats and to avoid saying bad things about Republicans.
So why aren't Democrats getting angry. I mean, it's not just on the economy that we see this. President Biden gave a terrific speech to open the campaign, talking about January 6th. And the headlines were all about Trump and what he was doing. I mean, people said, well, it's a good speech, but look at what Trump. And so they're not giving equal time or fair coverage to the economy and to other issues related to the successes of the Biden administration. And that troubles me.
Yeah, it is. It's the thing is, unfortunately, there's, for one thing, there's a personality type issue, right? If you're in America in 2024, people who are angry and likely to send threatening letters and so on are much more likely to be on the right than on the left. It's not completely true. I mean, it happens on both sides, but by and large, people are angrier on the right and much more organized to express their anger, which then influences the coverage. And partly I just think that at this point, it's almost like a reflex. I mean, it's at this point, a lot of mainstream media have internalized being even-handed, regardless of the reality, that it's almost like a nervous tic. I mean, I've fairly often seen headlines on mainstream media outlets where the initial headline is outrageously diffident about pointing out, you know, the bad stuff happening on the Trump side or good stuff happening on Biden's side, and then they do get a wave of protests from readers, and you can watch online that the headline that it goes up when the article goes up has been changed to something much closer to the truth 6 hours later, and that there's a process going on there. Somebody, you know, they're getting they are getting mail, they are getting the protests. But still, it's a kind of a running joke among people I talk to, correspond, that they, when they're, you know, the excellent job report, here's why that's bad for Biden. You know, that's the way that the reporting tends to go.
You know, and of course, the reporting exacerbates why it would be bad, because they keep saying it's bad. And it's interesting, particularly because politically, congressional Republicans are trying to take credit for the economy and for all these, they're taking credit for things they voted against. And then even maybe pushing it to, oh, it's really all because Trump did something. Is there any
Trump has gone and said that the reason the stock market is up is because people are expecting him to be returned to office, which I would say, you know, you laugh, and I think that's ridiculous. I would think that somebody who is that, you know, ridiculous would just be laughed out of public life, but apparently that's not how it works.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's in that vein of how Republicans are sort of shifting the narrative on our economy. I feel like there's been a long-held perception that Republicans, you know, favor the wealthy, and the data supports that and suggests that the Democrats are the ones who help our economy to grow for the benefit of the middle and lower classes. But Republicans just always spin that narrative. I'm wondering, just what is your assessment when it comes to how Republicans handle the economy versus Democrats?
Okay. The first thing to say is most of the time, the party that holds the White House or even controls Congress doesn't have that much impact, at least on the short run of the economy. You know, except in exceptional circumstances, the Federal Reserve, which is quasi-independent and in practice pretty nonpartisan, is, you know, actually makes those decisions. Now, we've had a lot of exceptional circumstances lately, and there's no question that we actually did a terrific job, I think, of handling COVID. When all is said and done, you know, we had this enormously disruptive thing that 25 million people lost their jobs in a matter of weeks, and could have led to enormous hardship. We stepped in with really two big aid packages and a bunch of smaller ones, one under Trump, but it was bipartisan, and it was actually written by Democrats, and then a second one under Biden. And we got through it all with minimal financial hardship. We had a burst of inflation, which didn't last. And, we recovered from the slump, such as it was, much, much faster than from the previous one. So that's a case of, I would say that those were fundamentally Democratic policies. Now, Trump did sign the first bill, the CARES Act, but it was because there was no alternative. And if you look at, who actually drafted the key provisions, it was Democrats. So other than that, well, Republicans are always cutting taxes at the top and trying to cut benefits that go to people who have fallen on hard times, and Democrats do the reverse. There's clearly a lot you can see there, and I don't think it's a coincidence that U.S. inequality really took off. We were a relatively middle class society, and then we started to become increasingly unequal, starting in just about the time that Ronald Reagan took office. And that is it's hard to trace exactly one for one which policies did that, but it's certainly not accidental.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
But it does sound like you would agree with us that President Biden's handling of the economy is good, and that the Democratic policies would better serve the majority of Americans.
Yeah.
And so the question is, one, do you agree with that? And two, if you do, how can Democratic Party members and candidates get voters to understand that they will benefit if Democrats retain power in Congress and the White House?
Well, yes, I think the policies have been, very good. The critiques, people warned that Biden's plans would cause inflation, and we did in fact have a burst of inflation, but so did everybody else. The U.S. inflation has been almost identical to inflation in the European Union, for example. And meanwhile, we had a solid economic recovery. The warnings that inflation would become entrenched and hard to get rid of turned out to be false. So the policy in retrospect looks very much like what you would have called for, which, that you can critique details, but fundamentally we did the right thing. Now, in terms of selling it, one thing you can, of course, if there's good news, talk about it. Don't be shy about saying that stuff has gone well. Don't be shy about pointing to the new factories that have opened because of Biden policies. But also talk about what the other guys will do if they can. I mean, Republicans will still, they will kill Obamacare in a flash if they can. They came very close to doing that in 2017, which was wildly unpopular. People, the Democrats won big in the 2018 midterms in large part in the backlash against the attempt to kill Obamacare and take away a lot of people's health insurance. I don't think it should be hard to make the case. I mean, among other things, you can quote them themselves. You can quote Trump saying that he will kill Obamacare, and then say, well, he says he's going to come up with something much better, and he's had about 6 years to do that, and there's still nothing on the table. So I think that's a fair You know, in some ways, I have to say, I'm fortunate. I think fear may be a better tool than hope at this point.
Interesting. You know, the last time we had you on, we talked about your latest book, Arguing with Zombies, which is a great read. And the entire part of the point of that book was try to really make readers into intelligent consumers of, you know, the daily news, our economy. I'm just wondering sort of how you approach economic news and what you look for and what you would tell our readers at this moment right now, when there is a lot of misinformation about our economy. What should readers and people who are just reading the news be looking out for with sort of our economic news?
Okay. Now, I have a little bit of the problem. You know, there's a lot of film critics who are actually not as helpful as you'd like, because they've watched too many films, and so they think too much, and you know, they're kind of overloaded and have a hard time figuring out what will make sense to people who aren't watching three movies a day. So I sometimes have problems, I as do lots of my colleagues, in communicating, because you spend too much time immersed in it. You know, if you just like, if you say, well, you know, the Fed's preferred measure of inflation is the core personal consumption expenditures deflator, and people will basically, normal people will say, what? And so you do want to look for good reporting. You do. There's unfortunately, you're not, realistically, if you're a normal human being, even an extremely smart normal human being, you're not going to be able to parse the latest economic report from the Bureau of Labor Statistics and know what it means. So you're going to have to find people doing commentary. Now, I will say that I think the quality of economic reporting has gotten a lot better over my career in journalism. It's way better than it was 20 years ago. But don't do what a lot of people do, which is go by the headline. Read the whole thing, because often the real story, and that's part of what we were talking about before, but often the real story about what's actually happening, particularly if it's good news for Democrats, the real story is kind of like in paragraph 27. And so you probably do need to actually read your way through. It's what can I say? Look at do try to find commentary from people who seem calm. You know, if there's a, and I know I don't always, but the kind of hysterical, a few months ago we had one of the periodic outbreaks of the dollar is doomed, and which, you know, I can go through all the reasons why that was silly, but mainly if you have somebody who is constantly telling stories of doom, or constantly talking about how idiotic or stupid the policymakers are, that's probably somebody not to listen to. Try to find the calmer sources, and then just look. New York Times. I guess I couldn't tell you if it was really terrible, but it isn't. The economics reporting is fine, except that I think like I said, a lot of the important stuff gets buried fairly deep inside. So read a little bit further. Skimming the front page is not going to give you what you need to know.
That is great advice, I would say, especially because I don't think people realize that the headline writers aren't the same as the reporters or columnists who.
Yeah, that's a very big issue. And the social media posters, yes, are often even worse. You know, so if you see we're still unfortunately stuck to some extent using Twitter. If you see a tweet, even if it's coming from CNN or something like that, the person writing the tweet is probably 28 years old, not deeply versed in the subject, often, you know, and headlines. Yeah, I mean, I get to write my own headlines, but But that's absolutely unique to, I believe, to opinion writers. And the headlines are often very, very misleading.
Well, I think that is great. That is a great way to end this episode. You know, don't read the headlines. Go deeper into the article. Be smart consumers of the media and the news. Paul, you help us understand the economy so well. Thank you so much for joining us today to talk about it.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thanks, everyone, for watching or listening to this episode of iGen Politics. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode of iGen Politics. But in the meantime, we hope you'll subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. Or if you want to watch us on YouTube, you can do that as well at youtube.com/politicon. Be sure to like and subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Thanks, everyone, for watching or listening, and we will see you next week.
Looking forward to seeing you next week.